Hey guys, I don't know if you're like me, but I love Count the Dings and everything it has to offer. I just can't find everything I need. You know, I know about Cinephobe, and I know about the mailbag, and I know about Bomb, but that's all we do, right, Amin?
No, we do so much more.
What?
Yeah, absolutely. If you sign up, patreon.com/countthedings, you'll find a plethora of other content, fresh content, extended content, the OG pod overflow, the Cinephobe cold opens that we've taken and made their own thing to live only there, the Rewatchingtons, Bomb in its full and unadulterated cut, early drops of Cinephobe episodes, and so much more.
Said the OG pod. Now, is it new or is it old?
Mace, I'm glad you asked that. It is a new incarnation of the old OG pod.
Oh.
So it's me, Zach, Trey, Waz, Tom.
I love those guys.
Just like we always were, going back to the True Hoop days, we're recreating that magic, recapturing and putting it back out. We're talking hoops, we're talking pop culture, and most importantly, we're talking for 40 minutes for free, but then another specific Patreon exclusive segment for every one of those episodes.
Funny enough about that OG pod, you're getting Tom and Trey on Mondays, you're getting me and Waz, aka Zosny, on Wednesdays. Amin's floating in between.
I'm a floater.
You never know when you're going to get Amin in those, so you got to listen to them all.
And what if I'm not sure what Maze looks like, because I've always thought he's a fat man with a fedora, he's got a weird voice. How can I see for myself what this Maze character actually looks like?
It's crazy you don't know the answer to this because it's the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page.
What?
The CT5s on the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page. You can look at all of us.
You can get all the OG pods on YouTube too, at Count the Dings 1 on YouTube, at Cinephobe Pod on YouTube. Patreon.com/countthedings gets you everything all in one feed. You can link it to your Spotify. And now enjoy the show.
Hey, listener, Underdog Fantasy is the easiest place to play fantasy sports. Also, the fastest growing fantasy app in the industry. You can play Pick'em, pick whether your favorite players will have a higher or lower total in each stat for this week's games for a chance to win big. You can actually win up to 100 times your money in a single night. That's right. I didn't say 10. I didn't say 20. Up to 100 times your money. Pick between 2 and 5 players. Build a Pick'em entry. My favorite feature, you can make rivals picks. Hit 2 players against each other. Wembanyama versus Nikola Jokic. Tim Hardaway Jr. versus Norm Powell. Kawhi Leonard versus Steph Curry. Who knows? Maybe Grayson Allen versus Pat Connaughton. You get where I'm going with that. You can do it all with Underdog Fantasy. Make sure you sign up today with the promo code DING. That's D-I-N-G. And get your first deposit doubled up to $100, as well as an instant Pick'em special. Visit underdogfantasy.com or find them in the app store. And don't forget to register with our promo code DING, D-I-N-G, to get your first deposit doubled up to $100, as well as an instant Pick'em special. Must be 18 or older and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play? Call 1-800-522-4700 or visit www.ncpgambling.org.
r/ is a hilarious podcast where Dabney Bailey uses ridiculous voices and emotions to read aloud the week's craziest Reddit posts.
He reenacts various Reddit threads covering wild stories and secrets, petty revenge, relationships, and much more.
So if you're looking for a daily distraction and a laugh, check out r/ wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Sean.
And I'm Joe.
And we are the hosts of The Horror Show, the show that dissects, mutilates, dismembers, and butchers all of your favorite and not-so-favorite cult classics and horror movies. We're talking about everything from Lori Loughlin dancing on a BMX bike in Rad, all the way over to 80s classics like Friday the 13th and Nightmare on Elm Street.
Join us every week as we pick another movie that we try desperately to find the good in while laughing our way through the bad.
And there's a lot of bad. Looking through his movies, he appears to just love frogs, because then we get Toad Warrior in 1996 and Max Hell Frog Warrior in 2002. So,
not a fan of horror? Don't worry about it. Almost every episode is filled with personal anecdotes and jokes about all things entertainment.
So join us every week on any of your favorite podcasting apps and services, or find us at IHateHorror.com or on Instagram at IHateHorror.
When you listen to Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone, the comedy podcast, you get a belly full of laughs and a head full of real information. Our gallimaufry of expert guests answer questions on stuff adults need to know. I have mold in my dwelling. What do I do? What's gerrymandering? What happens chemically when I fall in love? How do I handle a parent-teacher conference? What are microbes? Listen to Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone. Solve problems, get laughs.
Your picks have been horrible, man.
It's the point. It's the point of the show. Isn't it? It's possible. I don't understand what this podcast is about.
Poppycock.
It's a fuck house.
On a weekly basis, we are consuming more concentrated bad movies than probably anybody in the history of mankind.
Poppycock.
What story? What are you talking about?
Do you want lunch?
I have yet to laugh in this movie. I'll just tell you that.
You picked it, motherfucker. Just remember that.
You know what the problem with Hollywood is? They make shit. Unbelievable, unremarkable shit.
So I was legitimately offended.
You were offended?
I was offended.
I didn't know you could get offended.
I was offended.
This did it.
If I were gay, I wouldn't be offended.
They're fucking making shit up, I mean.
Inconsequential detail after inconsequential detail after inconsequential detail.
Bees don't lie.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. I'm holding a mic in my hands and now I'm talking all over. Okay.
Welcome to Cinephobe, Addendum, Filing Appeal Edition, whatever the hell we're calling this extra edition of Cinephobe Daredevil.
We thought about this shit long and hard, man. Don't fuck it up.
What is it called again? The Addendum?
No, we're filing an appeal. The Addendum was disclosure.
We're filing an appeal just like Ben Affleck did in Daredevil when he went to go harass Jennifer Garner. I'm your host, Zach Harper. Anthony Mays is here. Amin Al-Hassan is here. And we're joined by our guest, friend of the show, girlfriend of me, it's Aaron Darling Taralva, comedian, writer, actor, podcaster, the Hot Pizza Ass podcast, TikToker of It's Conspiracy Seriously podcast, which has like a million followers or something like that, and it's breaking down pop culture conspiracies left and right. And Aaron is an expert in comic book nerds, because Aaron was part of Con TV with Cinedine. She did, quote, dude entertainment centric outlets like AMC and Crave and all kinds of stuff. She's been to multiple comic cons.
Where are you reading this from? Like, who wrote this?
Yeah.
My notes that I poorly scribbled. Some of it's legible. Aaron, welcome to Cinephobe.
Thank you. I would like to do an addendum to that introduction.
Yeah, maybe you can introduce yourself a little better.
Yeah. So I'm not an expert in any of this, but I have a lot of experience, I guess, like covering comic book nerd types of movies, but certainly not an expert
in Daredevil. Right. Not an expert in Daredevil comic books themselves, just the nerds who like them. Because as you've said, you've been to multiple Comic-Cons in multiple cities.
Yes,
what's that like?
What's it like being at a Comic-Con?
What does virginity smell like when it's concentrated in those amounts?
Jergens.
You know, it's actually the opposite. It's like a freaky deaky shit happens at Comic-Cons and nerd conventions, you guys. I remember one time I was working at this one in Texas, actually. And I was doing a Comic-Con there, filming a bunch of content for one of these dude-centric outlets that I was working for. And I remember I could not sleep because the nerds in the room around me were banging like hardcore.
In the rooms with an S?
plural?
Like surround sound banging?
I didn't know if it was multiple rooms or if it was just one couple, but it was super, super loud. And luckily we were in San Antonio and some of my family's there. So like the next night I just stayed with them, but like I could not sleep because it sounded like they were like next to me. You know what I'm saying?
Was it just noises or did they use actual words?
I could not understand the actual words, but it was like sex noises.
So it wasn't Klingon.
Yes.
It wasn't like a Chewbacca noise when the dude came or something like that. Like,
no.
Okay.
Chumaka-raka.
Yeah, because that's the thing about Comic-Cons is that it's all the nerds are on the same level. Mm-hmm. So it's not like they're having to deal with hotties and bros all the time. They get to just be the king of the arena.
Amin disagrees.
I went to Star Wars Celebration twice, right? And the second time I went, because I had to pretend I was working, I decided to carry some equipment with me and said I was going to do a podcast. And so I roamed around and one of the rooms they had was speed dating.
Oh my God.
I interviewed the guy who throws it and he's like, turns out this guy is like the ultimate mercenary. He does one at all the Comic Cons. He does a Marvel-based one. He does a Star Wars one. He does a Star Trek one. It's like whatever the convention is, he finds his niche and sort it out. And so I asked him like, well, like, do they find love? He's like, yeah, a lot of them do. But like, there's still kind of like layers to this shit, basically. And even as I observed the proceedings, I was like, yeah, she's definitely a lot hotter than everybody else in this room. It happens.
Well, also now, like, nerd stuff is mainstream. So it's not just like nerds hanging out at conventions. It's like the cool kids are now infiltrating.
But are they?
Yes. Oh, Comic-Con is all like industry parties now.
Okay.
It's not like what you think it is, probably.
Here's what I think it is, okay? Because I've never been to any of these. What I imagine is just like a bunch of furries and like people in costumes, like just hoping to talk to a woman.
That's not at all what it is.
Okay.
No.
I mean, look, some of these women, they're in costume and these costumes, yeah, file.
I just assume they're paid models to go dress like.
No. Okay. No. All right. Like, these are people who, like, they're into it, man. It's like Aaron said, like, this is mainstream now.
All right. So, Aaron, is there like a weirdest moment where you've said something and you just can't believe that comic book nerds or any of these kind of people have gotten upset about it? Because I would imagine as a woman doing this stuff, like, you're held to a different standard of talking about this stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it's just called being a woman on the internet, like that strange phenomenon of being a woman on the internet. A lot of the times people don't understand always that I have a journalism degree, so I would get these jobs sometimes not necessarily because I was an expert, but because I was good at being on camera and interviewing people. So you get these like entertainment jobs and you prep and you do stuff, but like I'm not an expert in every single category of entertainment or whatever, you know, like I grew up on Star Wars, but like, I don't know Star Trek. So I'm not like the best person. Like, that's why you have a producer, you have people that give you notes and stuff like that. And so, yeah, I've definitely been like freaking ripped apart in the comment section for sure. I think the best negative comment I ever heard about myself was that someone would rather eat a rotten, aborted fetus than listen to me talk. Yeah, someone said that.
You know what you should have done?
Not a fresh one?
Dared him?
No, not even dare. You show up with a rotten aborted fetus. It's like, game on.
It is like, here you go. I'll shut up. You eat it.
I'll start talking. Yeah. The moment you eat it, I will stop.
Aaron, did you ever wear costumes at these Comic-Cons?
I did it one time. I think it was my first Comic-Con, and I have a friend that's an amazing cosplayer. And so I think my last day there for a segment, a video segment that we were doing, I did Emma Frost from X-Men First Class, and that's the only time that I've done it. So the January Jones Emma Frost. So I think I still have that costume somewhere. I think I have or I might have donated it. I'm not sure. I think I gave it to one of my cross-dressing friends, actually.
The white boots, the knee-high white boots and the blue dress,
Yeah.
You could be Emma Frost and Zach could be Mr. Freeze. Be the perfect couple.
Oh, what a cool idea. Oh,
shit, you stole my line. That would be really cool.
I guess let's get into your thoughts on this movie. Let me try to find some text messages. as you were watching this movie.
So, Aaron, you watched this by yourself, right? You didn't watch it with Zach?
Yeah, because Zach has a very extensive note-taking process. I did not want to spend 3 hours on this movie. I wanted to get it over with. And I, you know, I'd never seen it prior, so I was assuming it wasn't going to be that great. My assumption was correct, for my viewing purposes at least.
Spoiler alert, yeah.
So I watched it on Monday before Zach watched it. As I was watching it, I was actually mad that I agreed to do this show. And I let him know.
Welcome to Cinephobe.
I think Zach is going to read some messages that I sent while I was watching, so you guys can get a state of my mind when I was viewing.
Anger is one of the first stages of Cinephobe.
Monday, 8:28 p.m. I have to watch Daredevil now. 8:43. This movie is already so bad. I responded, I actually have never seen it. She said, you'll be annoyed that you had to watch it. Let's just put it this way. In the last 10 minutes since you sent me the text, I thought it was at least 30 minutes. Wow, that movie was so bad.
That's pretty damn.
Did you pause at any point to take notes, or were you just trying to get through it?
I did not pause to take notes, but I do have notes on my phone. And the only reason why I wasn't more specific in the text messages is because I know Zach hadn't watched it yet and I didn't want to give anything away. So we haven't actually
spoiled Daredevil, right?
We haven't discussed this movie. This will be the first time that we talk about it, because I wanted to just have fresh takes, and I didn't want to, my great ideas to go to Zach, who would steal them. So
Wow.
Because Zach wasn't meeting your Daredevil needs earlier in the week, did you have to turn elsewhere to find somebody else to talk to about Daredevil?
About Daredevil, right, yeah.
You know what? I don't know anyone that's seen it or remembers it. There was one friend. I have one friend.
What about like a blind man on the street? Did you ask him what he felt like?
One blind man.
I have one friend who's an actor, and well, I have a lot of friends that are actors, but this is like one person that just like hit me up and I had a question about something and we were texting back and forth, and I mentioned it to him and he said, wow, the only thing I remember about that movie is it was the same week that the Colin Farrell sex tape came out.
Oh!
Bullseye.
Bullseye.
I had no idea, and I also didn't know that it existed, but I was like, wait, what? Hold on.
I didn't know that existed either. Okay. I'd watch him have sex. I'd be curious.
Aaron, I got a question for you, because you do have a lot of friends who are in the acting profession. How do they feel about the concept of us watching probably not their proudest moments and having fun at their expense? Maybe not them specifically, but like the concept that this exists.
Yeah, you know what's funny is that I think that everyone that's been in the performance space has created projects or been a part of projects that they know are not like their top tier best effort, or it turned out a way that they don't really love. And a lot of creatives also have this experience where it's like you have one idea how it's going to go, and then there's like 15 other people and the idea completely changes. I have friends who are filmmakers that even when they had films coming out, and Zach was telling me, you guys might want to do an episode. And I was like, ooh, you guys should hold off on that. Like, wait for a second, because this movie just came out and my filmmaker friend created it, and he's going to be really salty and like sensitive for like at least a year until he can look back and be like, okay, that wasn't my best work. So I think there's a period of time where it's kind of like, it's, you got to be careful about that. But then after that, it's like, you know, people are going to have opinions, and they experience that constantly because their shit gets reviewed, you know? So you have to constantly have to deal with other people's opinions about stuff. So I don't know. I think that the fact that this exists and it's going to continue to exist, it's just par for the course at a certain point.
God willing. Yeah.
That one's up in the air somewhat.
One thing that I walked away from,
like Ben Affleck walked away from Jennifer Garner in the director's cut.
In the director's cut, but not in the original, was trying to think of, Aaron, how did you experience the scene where Ben decides, I'm going to go walk after Jennifer Garner because she didn't give me her name, and then essentially assaults her just to get her name, as he is exhibiting, I think, what we called extreme toxic masculinity?
It's weird to watch now. Like, the first note that I wrote about this film is that this movie made in 2003 feels like it was made in 1993.
Like, 20 CB!
Yeah, we actually discovered a loophole in the 21st century that
2003 actually comes before 1998 in the timeline.
2001 and 2002 are the 21st century, but 2003 is the 20th century. Yeah. Yeah.
That totally makes sense because like there was a lot, like that moment was weird. There was also a lot of like was this movie racist? Like there were moments where I was like, yo, how is that in here?
Aaron. So Coolio's in the director's cut. Maze, please. You're the one that watched it. I don't know why I'm saying I didn't watch it.
Take it away.
So there's a tangential plot that involves Coolio being framed for killing a prostitute, where he was passed at an alley so full of THC that he would have gotten Staten Island high.
Oh my God.
He wakes up with his gun. The cops arrest him. You know, cut and dry. Coolio killed the prostitute. Game over. But we find out that it's an elaborate ruse and that the prostitute was actually leaking information. And so she was murdered. And then they framed Coolio. And Coolio's in court. He's getting deposed. And he's explaining that he's never owned a handgun. So how could he possibly have killed this woman? Because he never owned a handgun. Shotguns are much better. You can shoot with a wider shot and you can hit more stuff.
Yeah.
Eventually, we find out, due to some guy's cufflink that says, wow, that he's the one who organized the murder. Coolio is innocent. At the very end, Coolio gets off. He's innocent. And Jon Favreau is awkwardly dapping him. And Coolio says, if you need anything, come down to 117th Street. I got you.
Now, Maze, obviously, Coolio is the guy playing the role. What was the name of the character that he played?
Dante Jackson.
So the blackest name that the director and writer could.
Dante Jackson. Yeah.
Dante Jackson.
Jericho action Dante Jackson.
This movie's incredibly racist. Incredibly offensive to blind people.
Oh my God.
Yes. Totally. And also, like, as a Latina, the line where he's like, oh, this was that her name sounds like a Mexican appetizer. I was like, yikes. Also, she's Greek. So I was like, mind blown. Hold up. And then right after that, there was like a second racist joke, like right within 2 minutes of the Mexican joke. I was like, dude, what is going on here? Like, this would never, ever fly. It felt like the 89 Batman was better than this movie. And I cannot believe that this was made in 2003. It really shocked me, to be honest. I was like, yo.
To be clear, Aaron's saying that the 89 Batman was more politically correct than the 2003 post 9/11 Daredevil.
Yeah. She's not wrong.
I stand by that, though.
To be fair, though, giving a Greek family the last name Nachos was confusing.
Well, they didn't give that. This is all in Marvel lore, right? So these characters are real characters written by someone else. But the commentary, that joke didn't have to be in there.
Right. It's.
I mean, like, this is my thing. Why? It's not the Bible. Why are we so like, oh no, it has to be that name. Can't give her a different Greek name. No, Electra's name is Nachos. Like, I don't understand why they are so determined to stay true to the canon on something that is fairly, like, insignificant, but are willing to change things like if we care about canon, Daredevil doesn't get blind as a child, right? Daredevil gets blinded as a grown-ass man.
Yeah, and they changed his dad's boxer nickname to the devil.
Yeah.
So that that's where we get Daredevil from, is AJ Soprano daring him and then the dad being named the devil.
It's just crazy to me the things that we'll be really dogmatic about. Like, this has to be exactly as it was written by Stan Lee and Jack Kirby or whoever the hell wrote it.
Did Stan Lee write Daredevil?
No, but like, he gets an executive producer credit on
all this. He gets to show up. I'm so sick of him showing up in these movies.
No, I'm not really sick of it. Stop saying that.
I want more Stan Lee. I also worked for Stan Lee.
That's going to be tough.
So yeah, we can't talk about Stan.
Can we do the Tupac
Stan
hologram?
There should be a Stan Lee hologram in all the MCU movies. Yeah.
He had to know, as it was, you know, he's getting older. He had to know, look, I'm not going to be here forever. So did he just dress up every day something different and just shoot a scene?
They just film a scene? That's actually not a bad idea.
Yeah. Like Tupac.
As far as I know, there was some stuff like that. That was some discussions that were being had towards the end. And I don't know all the details, but I know that I have friends that worked for him, that it got so complicated and messy that they were out. So So I think, you know, that's a whole nother conversation, but like profiting off someone's image when they're gone, like the consent involved, you know, what is okay and what's not okay. It's just a whole thing when you're that big of a celebrity, you know, and it's crazy that like we have the technology to like, that's even a conversation, you know, it's kind of wild.
You work with him directly or just kind of for his company?
Yeah, so I worked for POW Entertainment. I did their video content. So went like LA Comic Con and stuff like that, which was Kamikaze at the time. I was doing their in-house video content and interviews and stuff like that. So, yes.
How many times a day would he say the word Excelsior?
Never.
Never?
Never. Well, he wasn't like the direct. Like he was old at that point. So he wasn't like my direct like producer, or he wasn't like giving notes on things like that. Like it was just more of like when I went into the office, he was there. And
but he wouldn't say like Excelsior, let's get this started.
Excelsior, Aaron's Excelsior. Here today.
Excelsior, would you like some Subway?
Excelsior, you know I can't have pepperoncinis.
Excelsior, damn it, my prostate's acting up again.
Pull up the Excelsior spreadsheet for me so I can see the numbers.
That's reminds me of when I worked for the Oakland Raiders doing merchandising for them and retail. Al Davis came to one of the stores once.
Did you work for the Oakley Raiders?
I got that.
I went from the Raiders to Oakley, you dick.
The Oakley Raiders.
He went from the Oakland Raiders to raiding the Oakley store after hours.
Yeah, don't get mad because I got 75% off on Oakley 75? Sunglasses. 75% off.
Good Lord. That just shows you how freaking inflated the prices are. My God.
Ridiculous.
By the way, every time I imagine Zach working at Oakley, I always imagine you on your lunch break going to Johnny Rockets with a pair of wrapper.
No, you get the over the tops and walk through the mall, man. Oh my God. Coolest guy there. Coolest guy in the Sacramento mall.
Speaking of sunglasses, what did you think, Aaron, whenever Ben Affleck took his glasses off?
I mean, first of all, the glasses bothered me. They just seemed, just in general, like very dated.
Yeah.
But okay, you know, I didn't really have that many thoughts about when he was wearing the glasses themselves, but I will, that first shot of him at the church when they take the mask off and you see his face for the first time as an adult, I was like, whoa, now that's the Ben Affleck that should be hitting on 19-year-old girls on Raya. not the one now.
Not grizzled, bloated Ben Affleck with 5 o'clock shadow?
Because that's the image that I have of him, you know? I have like the one now from like that viral TikTok video. And I was like, oh shit, that's what he used to look like? Whoa.
Wait, even as his eyes were all cross-eyed and staring off into space, you're still like, humana, humana, humana?
He's a good-looking guy.
He has a beautiful face.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what I couldn't stop thinking about today? He really does look like Paul Rudd, like a little bit.
No, this is racist.
Slow down, Bobby J.
He's white. He's Ben Affleck.
No, this is not accurate.
I do think that Ben Affleck does look pretty much like the most generic white dude you could draw up. Like if you were creating a white man in a lab,
yeah,
he'd be Ben Affleck,
white man. But good looking.
Yeah, like a hot white guy.
Yeah,
right.
That's why. So
he's hot. Aaron, y'all think he's hot?
He's not bad looking. Like he's a he was good looking.
The dating catalog. I mean, like
all power to him. But I'm just saying, he looks like Joe from fucking Family Guy with that big block chin.
Also
man.
Racist. No,
isn't Joe like the best looking guy on Family Guy?
I mean, he's gonna say Cleveland.
No, Jerome, the owner of the bar.
Racist. No, Aaron, when we watched Reindeer Games last episode, the whole start of the movie is essentially like this woman has been writing letters to his cellmate in prison. He's in prison with this guy. He and this girl have never met. And so they've been writing letters back and forth. And now they're going to get out and he's going to meet and she's going to take him to a motel and all this stuff. Well, 2 days before he gets out of jail, he gets murdered. And so now Ben Affleck assumes the identity of this man and meets this woman as the guy that she's been writing. And I said, look, this has to be best case scenario for what she could have imagined, right? She's been writing this prisoner. She doesn't know what he looks like. He walks out of there and it's Fleck in whatever fucking year that was, 2002. That's best case scenario for that, right?
Totally. I so agree with that. I think he's adorable. Like, I think Ben Affleck is, you know, a talented, cute dude.
I'll push back on the talented, but cute, I'm on.
Oscars.
He's a good director.
He is a dude.
He's a good writer.
He sure is a dude.
He is a good writer and he's a good director.
The movies that he directs have been pretty good.
Very good.
There hasn't been nearly as many flops as in his acting career.
Agreed. All right, so Aaron, let's go through your notes. How many notes do you have here?
Just a few.
Take us through Daredevil, Aaron.
All right, so.
Is it in Braille?
Oh my God. I already told you guys the first ones. Also, the fighting scenes I thought were so bad, with the exception of the playground. I kind of liked that one. What? But the kids?
What? Very memorable.
The kids with the stick, I was like, this is so bad, badly choreographed. And it's not those kids' fault. Like, whoever was involved in that just, like, did a very poor job. Do you guys have thoughts on that?
On the playground being the best fight? I'm going to say no, respectfully.
At one point, Affleck has his cane up in the air and he's kind of smugly looking and he does the Agent Smith beckon, and I called him Agent Smitty.
Agent Smitty. Yeah, the thing about that, like that scene in particular, is that Jennifer Garner is so talented. She's amazing and I buy her in that role, but I don't buy him in that action-y hero type of role. Like, I could see why he got cast as like the old downtrodden Batman and not like Batman in his prime. You know what I'm saying? Like, it kind of makes sense.
Right. This is Batman on Raya going after 19-year-olds. Yeah.
Yeah. This is like Daredevil not in his prime, except he's actually supposed to be in his prime, right? But it's just not great.
The genesis of the meet cute is that he bumps into her, asks her for the honey. She says, get it yourself. And then he says, I don't know where it is. She says, what, are you blind? And she looks up and he's blind, of course. So the question I ask the guys is, if you were blind, would you use it to hit on women? I'm going to flip it for you. If a blind man hit on you, how would you handle that situation?
I would be perplexed as to why he wanted to hit on me in the first place.
He smelled you.
Now, if he smelled you before you walked into the cafe, right? Because that's what happened with Jennifer Garner. He smelled her and then she walked in.
I don't like that.
Now that I think about it, there's nothing you could say as a blind guy. I never thought about that. There's literally nothing you can say that's going to make her feel like, oh, because anything does make it sound creepy. Like, I smelt you when you walked in.
Yeah. Does being blind get you a get out of jail free card for being a creep? Like, is there the social awkwardness of not wanting to be mean to a blind person that lets you get away with stuff?
I don't know. That's a really good question. I just think, like, from the perspective of someone that has been hit on by people, I think that I don't know how I would handle that situation. Yeah, none of y'all have ever been hit on.
Even at Comic-Con, me and Zach couldn't get hit on.
I meant as a woman.
None of us.
But yes, as a woman, I don't know. Like, I just, if a blind guy hit on me by saying that he smelt me or he felt my energy, like, when those are all very weird things to kind of like conceptualize. But I guess it'd be different if we had a conversation.
Have you ever introduced yourself by your full name? This is a question we've done several times on the podcast, but have you ever said your full name when you, because I've never met anyone who's done that. I've always say, hey, what's your name? Amin, and that's it. I don't say, Amin Ohasson, nice to meet you. I don't do that, particularly not with someone I'm trying to be amorously involved with. Have you ever introed yourself using your full name, Aaron?
Yes, at networking events, I do use my first and last name.
Why?
Because I want them to remember me, and I don't want them to think I'm interested in me.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I never thought about that. That immediately kind of neuters the interaction, right? Like, this is not what...
Yeah, it's very formal, you know?
Never like, occurred to him. Not once.
Yeah.
Dude, I just learned like a couple of
toxic
months ago
masculine
that
man,
if you're in an elevator with a
never
woman...
Never thought of it.
No, I'm just saying, I did not know
never
this.
Never once occurred to him, like, why would she do that?
if you're in an elevator with a woman, you're supposed to get out of the elevator first.
I don't even know where this is going. I'm already worried.
Because apparently if you stand there and wait, it's going to make it seem like you're creepily following her to see what floor she's getting off of, where her room is or whatever. So
that means it's going to start knocking women out of the way to get out of the elevator first.
That's what I've been doing ever since, Maze. Emil, you're welcome.
Why couldn't you just do the chivalrous thing of letting them off first and then like getting around them and going where you need to go?
And then sprint?
I didn't say sprint. You dipshit.
Like a psycho.
When did I say sprint?
And then you do the Michael Cera, you're like, bye.
Just get around them. Walk a little faster. Sprint. Yeah. Let them get out. And then to put them at ease, sprint away from them.
Like Usain Bolt.
Oh my God.
Better yet, put on some rollerblades and just a Palo Alto down the hallway, like with that helmet that's kind of like curved.
Aaron, talk to me about Bullseye, Colin Farrell in this movie. He's introduced throwing darts in Ireland just while chugging a beer, and then he's off to the races from there.
I was completely mystified by his involvement in the storyline because it seemed very minuscule and kind of random, and there wasn't like a great introduction for this character. Why are they here?
That's a great question.
It really confused me a lot. Does anyone catch anything that I didn't catch? I don't know.
He's literally just a hired assassin.
That's all I know.
He's a hired gun, or I guess a hired blade. He's out there in Ireland.
He's a hired dart.
Kingpin's got him on speed dial, so we can just call him on the Nokia, you know?
For a movie that had so much exposition about everybody else.
Right.
To not explain who he was or anything, just like, get me Bullseye. And then, hey, he's throwing darts and chugging beers, like, and listen to House of Pain.
Yeah, and the other thing that really kind of confused me about the situation, would love to hear your guys' take, is the scene in the bar when he throws the needles at the guy.
Oh, the paperclip shards, yeah.
So Amin didn't catch us either. He had the paperclip. Do you see that?
No.
Okay, so he pulls a paperclip as like a magic trick, and then he straightened it and then
broke off
the little pieces. Yeah, so that's what that is. Those are the little needles. It's the paperclip.
I guess I'm just really confused about what the point was. Like,
he's a killer.
Was he trying to kill this dude in the bar and everyone's watching? Like, all the extras are like,
we just witnessed the murder.
Would you not, as the director, would you not be like, okay, you guys all pretend like you're doing your own thing, so it's not as weird that this guy just walked in and he's like murdering this dude for no reason?
Right. It's an excellent question. I would like to know the motivations.
The great thing about the Bullseye character is that we learned in the trivia that he has a costume in the comics. But in the movie, they opted against putting him in a costume because they wanted to keep it, quote, realistic. The realistic tone. Mm.
They were going for gritty and realism in this superhero movie.
And they carved Bullseye in his forehead.
And the ability to turn a paperclip into a deadly weapon. That was the point, Aaron, is just to show that you give that man anything he can throw, you're dead.
My AirPods.
I will say this, though. About, like, Colin Farrell is really unnerving to watch, like, in that role. So I really liked his performance. I thought he was great. It's not, like, the best material that he had, but just watching him, it did kind of make me feel a little bit on edge. Like, oh, this guy's kind of creepy.
Now, we had this question because when he shows up to like do the big battle scene with Elektra and Daredevil, he yells to her after her father has just been put into the ground, "Hey, orphan," which is kind of harsh, right? But Amin believes that she's too old to be an orphan at this point.
I agree.
So what's the cutoff?
For orphanage?
Yeah.
I would say, if under 18, you're an orphan. I think that orphan implies that you lost a parental figure. And even like a parent, like I think like after the age of 18, do your parents really parent you?
I'll push it a little further. I say like, if you're 17 and your parents are like,
I think you're an orphan. Like,
you're not an orphan at that point, man. Like, you're grown. Whatever age you can start like getting a job and working, you cease to be an orphan.
I had a job at 15. So I wouldn't have been an orphan at 15 if my parents died?
No. Yeah, what was your job?
I worked at the Gap.
Working for the Raiders?
No, I worked at the Gap. Same mall.
Zach, when you worked at the Gap,
Stock boy.
Did you look Did you look at the people who worked in Oakley, like as people walking in slow motion, the coolest people?
No, I mean, don't be an,
one day.
Don't be an idiot.
One day.
The Oakley store wasn't there yet. Okay. I opened the Oakley store.
In the hierarchy, who was like the top of the food chain at this mall?
Well, for us, it was Banana Republic because that's like the nice Gap.
They had a Banana Republic and a Gap at the same mall?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Got to appeal to different customer bases.
Yeah.
Abercrombie was like, oh my God, these are the cool kids. These are like the beautiful people, right? Not us mongrels in the Gap, like wearing khakis.
They make us wear shirts.
All right, Aaron, what other big moments from this movie really caught your eye?
Well, I mean, obviously the soundtrack. I mean, who?
Bangers.
Who
Bangers
did this?
All day.
Evanescence.
I just want to know. Mean,
we had Seether in there.
I want to know if there probably was a soundtrack, right? Like, I'm just curious.
Yeah. There,
like, they sold, like, as a CD, you know? Like, who was like, yeah, man, I'm totally going to listen to this. Oh, my God. Someone was, like, straight up on their, like, Nickelback, like, pop punk, like, really loving it. That was, like, the whole vibe of, like, every scene that had music.
Moby.
I was just like, Stank, what?
Fuel.
Fuel.
Chevelle.
House of Pain.
How dated does that soundtrack feel? Saliva. Ridiculous.
Revis. Not Darrell Revis. Palo Alto. One word. Yeah, it took me back. I mean, honestly, this movie had a lot in common with previous Cinephobe, Catwoman, which also had Hoobastank on the soundtrack.
So scandalous.
But yeah, the double Evanescence, like the two biggest emotional peak moments of the film being set to Evanescence, the funeral and then the sandbag training montage.
Why wouldn't it be though? That's the most like emotional
dude, that's a
song on the soundtrack.
It's a beautiful song, the one.
It's a banger.
Actually, after I saw after I watched the movie, I was Googling Evanescence.
Coming from Means Corners, singing songs without the right lyrics.
I don't know the lyrics.
Mean, you gonna stand for this?
But do you guys know that song was like nominated for Grammys and stuff?
What?
Yeah, My Immortal, for sure.
Okay.
Yeah. 1,000,000%.
That song definitely,
it's sad.
I remembered it very, very specifically.
I like how it was, you know, they used it in the saddest scene where no one was crying. Like, why wasn't Jennifer crying at the funeral of her dad?
Nobody cries in this movie.
She was just like,
right?
Oh, there's one Affleck tear, just like in Reindeer Games. We got another.
That might have been a raindrop, though.
It got out under his mask, which I didn't understand. Because if you cry in a mask, it's just going to pool up. It's not going to slowly drip, so. What do I know?
Why was Jennifer Garner so mad at Ben Affleck at the funeral when he was like, I'll take care of you. Us against the world, man.
Because in the director's cut, he walked away from her instead of having sex with her. He just left her on the roof. That was the last time they hung out.
But in our cut, that didn't happen.
Yeah, they didn't include that? That's kind of important. I was so confused at why she was so mean to him when all he wanted to do was like comfort her and make her feel less alone.
Plus, he snapped at him for... said, I know how you feel. She said, you don't know how I feel. I said, actually, I know exactly how you feel. My father died due to like gang violence. Like,
we're just a couple
about?
Orphans cutting it up.
Now, he's definitely an orphan.
Yes, he's an orphan.
Yes.
And also, no exposition about his mom at all.
Oh, yeah.
Well, when did Martha die? When did Martha Daredevil die?
How did he grow up? Like, his dad died when he was 12. How did he get through 6 years of being an orphan?
Blindly.
Yeah, that wasn't in the comics because he got his powers when he was an adult, so they just skipped over that.
Yeah, that really
didn't we just kind of breezed through that.
Make a whole lot of sense. Also, like that scene, that origin story was really messed up too, by the way. Like how he became blind. I was like, whoa.
Yeah.
That's awful.
Well, what's more fucked up is the kids are still bullying him after he's blind.
Yeah. It's like, man, slow your roll.
They kept it real.
That really bothered me. I'm like, yo, that's evil shit right there. Let the blind kid go.
Yeah, but then, okay, so when he realized he could, like, all of a sudden he could see, and now he's, like, doing handstands on the buildings and sliding down, like, rain gutters and shit.
Woohoo!
And I know this is a wild thing for me to say, considering the cinematic universe that we're in, but it was just so unrealistic.
Yeah.
It was.
Didn't get that willing suspension of disbelief from you, huh, Aaron?
No.
Just couldn't do it, huh?
Couldn't. I mean, yes, we're talking about a Marvel movie, but I was just like, no, this would not happen.
For me, where it fell apart is like, all right, he gets radioactive waste in his eyes. His brain gets electrocuted or something. He gets more powers. All right. Elektra doesn't have powers. How can she jump 45 feet?
Oh, she's just a fucking ninja.
Bullseye doesn't have powers. His shit is that he's accurate. How is he good at hand-to-hand? Is he just Irish?
I love that the movie is so bad that somewhere disbelief is sitting at home suspended. It can't play. It's like, and then it gets a letter from like the Players Association, like, we've appealed.
Yeah.
This movie's so bad. You're back on the court. Like, yeah.
I was like, what?
Disbelief back in action.
Also, there's something else that kind of bothered me, just like, you know, thematically, is why does this movie start in a church? And then the church never comes back around. Like, it's never used again.
It does.
I blocked that part out of my memory then.
It was such a long flashback. You forgot right. It was a flashback. Because
you know that's all. It's all a flashback until he fights Colin Farrell in the church.
The whole movie's a flashback?
Like, yes. A good hour and 10 minutes is a fucking flashback. Like,
his whole life flashed before his eyes.
Oh, my God.
I never made that connection. His whole life flashes before his eyes, starting when he was a kid, all the way up until he's back in the church. When we're back in the church, he fights Colin Farrell, and then he goes to, after that, he goes to the building to fight Kingpin.
Right.
And that's the movie.
Okay.
That's
it. Whoa, yeah. So that's wild.
90% of the movie is a flashback.
I didn't. Yeah. That's so
crazy. It's awesome.
Maybe when he got orphaned, he ended up at the church because the priest is real familiar with them. Right. He's trying to get him to take confession. Who knows?
Yeah. But okay.
He's friends with this guy, and it's because he's from Hell's Kitchen, and this is his neighborhood.
Well, I'm glad I have a little bit of explanation for that, but that kind of bugged me.
Yeah.
Aaron, one of the themes that kept coming up was blind people. You know how, like in the movies, when they want to know how beautiful you are, they touch your face. And so I asked the fellas, could you date a blind person if it meant they have to feel up your face constantly?
God.
Not once, not the first meeting of like, oh yeah, that's what you look like. But I'm talking about like, oh, I love you so much.
I mean, like Zach will tell you straight up, like after I do my skincare routine, like you are not touching my face.
No touching.
It's over.
I'm really particular about that stuff. Bacteria, like it. No, I'm not a fan of like face touching in general. So that would probably not be my thing. But then again, if that was your partner and you loved them and you're like, oh, this is how they connect with me.
They just met.
You guys just met. This isn't.
Yeah.
But he saw her through his radar. Rooftop. Like through the rain.
But he touched her face too.
He did.
He touched her face. Yeah.
He touched her face. Yeah.
Clawed the hell out of her face.
All right, yeah. Aaron, you go on, let's just call it a first date with a blind person after you've fought to give your name to him, right?
Yes,
and he says, here, I want to take you somewhere. And he takes you to a rooftop so you can see the city. And then you're like, okay, well, I got to go. And he's like, no, 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 no. It's about to start raining. When the rain falls, that's how I can see you. Are you a person you've known maybe, best case scenario,
48 hours.
Are you letting them keep you out in the rain on a rooftop, okay, so that they can see you in that way?
I'm going to tell you a story, okay? It's not my story, but it's Mariah Carey's story from The Meaning of Mariah, my favorite book.
Hold on. This is legitimately Aaron's favorite book.
So when she was fucking around with Tommy Mottola and she was having an affair with Derek Jeter, they would make these little rendezvous, and she wrote a song about it, The Roof, off of Butterfly, my favorite Mariah album. And
wow, that was about Derek Jeter.
Yes, that's Jeter. The story. So she talks about how they had a glass of champagne, finish the Moe. They had Moe on the roof. It starts raining. She describes her outfit in the book in detail. She's like, I was serving like a warm brown Prada Gucci. She was in designer boots, a mini skirt, hanging out with Jeter on a rooftop. It starts raining and they have like the most passionate, like romantic evening. So I would say,
let me give a gift basket and an NDA.
I mean, I hope that NDA went both ways, like for her sake too, yeah, being in an abusive relationship. But yeah, you know, what's really interesting is like, I think, you know, when I think of like that, it's like the same thing. The only difference is Derek Jeter's not blind.
Yeah.
It's not really the same thing, though, because they knew each other. And this is a stranger that is claiming to be blind that wanted to take you on a roof.
Well, he was blind.
How do you know that?
I didn't know he wasn't.
Everything in his behavior says he's not blind.
Yeah, right.
Everything in his behavior says
he's not blind. But his eyes
including, including how he met, I met him, right?
Right.
If you go, if like you said to do the math, you're like, no, this dude's not blind at all. He's just a creep, walks around with a walking stick.
Right. Any other notes of note for you, Aaron, before we get to the
submission submitted?
I mean, yes.
Before we get to the end of this podcast. Yeah, what do you got?
How great is Michael Duncan Clark? How much do we miss him?
Michael Clark, yeah.
And love him.
I guess we miss him a lot. We can't get his name right.
Michael Clark Duncan, sorry.
Yeah. He's fantastic.
He's fantastic. His voice.
His voice.
Oh my God, yeah. The best voice.
Yeah, the same note too, bro.
Yeah, I mean, this is a positive note. I think he was the best part of the movie.
Wow.
Oh, over Favreau.
I always love Favreau. Who's had a more interesting career in the last 20 years than Jon Favreau, you know?
Nobody.
He's great.
The scene where he's trying to like nonchalantly stand on the staircase and he's feeling up the breasts on a statue, which by the way, it's a bird with breasts.
Yeah, it's whatever. Weird. Rich people.
But like that whole thing as he's looking around nervously, it hit me. Holy shit. He's the best actor in this whole goddamn movie.
Yes.
He's great.
He's legitimately a good actor. Like legitimately.
I would say Jennifer Garner's good too. I mean, I bought her in that role. She crushed it. Like her arms, man. Oh my God. She looks like a superhero. I love her.
Is she a superhero?
Apparently she's not because she died real quick. Yeah, she got killed. Jumped, like, yeah.
But she jumped like 60 feet. Like, she did, yeah. Superhero-esque? I don't know.
Aaron, we do a little segment called Ass On, Ass Off.
Okay.
Ass On is the worst acting performance. Ass Off is the best acting performance. So who is your ass on?
My ass on for the worst acting performance is, and I hate to say this because I'm sure this person has improved, but it was kid Ben Affleck.
Oh, young Sheldon.
Wow.
I know. I hate to say that.
I told you, Zach.
God.
I told you. Zach was caping for him.
Oh, no.
In the hospital scene.
I thought he acted his ass off.
No, I wasn't.
In the hospital scene, he was terrible elsewhere, but in that hospital scene, he was acting his ass off.
I thought the actor that played the dad was good in that hospital scene.
David Keith.
Yeah. I think he was.
Not Keith David.
That was a hard scene. And I think that the dad really crushed it. But no, I felt bad for the little kid because I was like, oh, this is just like the material that he has. And, you know, but it was that fight scene with the stick that really, I was like, God, this looks so bad. It's so fake. Like, and the handstand on the roof. Yeah, I felt bad for him, you know. So.
Okay.
It's kid Ben Affleck.
All right. Ass off.
Okay. For the best acting performance, I would say Michael Duncan Clark or Clark Duncan. I don't know.
He's a chameleon.
What's his name?
Michael Clark Duncan.
Duncan, yeah. Michael Clark.
Duncan Michael Clark.
I love him.
Michael Clark Duncan.
Yes, he just has a presence. He has a gravitas. And I love him. I love watching him in anything. So I really enjoyed him as this bad guy. It was fun to watch.
Even Armageddon? Would you like him in Armageddon? He's in that.
I really think I've seen Armageddon.
The way you guys have been fucking up Michael Clark Duncan's name, it reminds me of Rick and Morty with Chad Michael Vincent. Yeah. Chad Michael Vincent.
Aaron, Golden Dumpster. This is essentially like the most memorable part of the movie for you. So, Maze, do you want to give what we gave for our episode?
The nominees were the seesaw fight, Bullseye killing the grandma on the plane with the honey roasted peanut, Coolio explaining how Buckshot works. That was just for me. That's just an exclusive one for me. Electro training with the sandbags to Evanescence. Bullseye going for an awkward kiss after stabbing Electro to death. Zach chose Dante Jackson's entire role, which he didn't get to see, but Coolio's part of this movie is what he chose. Amin chose the Favreau Sanford and Son joke when he jokes about how much crap they have around their office because people keep paying and sporting goods and fish. And I chose the seesaw fight because come on, man.
Yeah, I think like for me, it's also the seesaw fight. But also I would say close second was the two racist jokes back to back. Because why? Oh, I remember the second one. The second one is the plane scene with the honey roasted peanut. With the old lady.
Yeah.
They were back to back and she makes some sort of like mulatto joke.
semi-colored boy.
Oh my God.
Maybe it's a mulatto.
A little coffee with this cream, yes. Yeah.
The worst part about that scene is that was completely unnecessary. Like, it wasn't even like a joke related to anything. Like, the other one, it was like, okay, I can kind of understand how someone justified that as like a one-liner or something, but this was completely unnecessary. That granny could have been talking about anything in the world. Why did it have to be like a racist opinion? That was wild. The back-to-back racist jokes, most memorable for me. I was like, yikes.
I thought it was very realistic because that's how I imagine white people talk about us all the time.
No comment. All right, Aaron, phobe or file for the movie Daredevil?
Phobe means I hated it.
Yeah.
I mean, phobe for sure. Is there any chance I would say file?
No, I don't imagine.
That Aaron confirmed, like, she's about to hit the nuclear launch code. Like, now this is going to make it take off.
No, right? This will fire at Russia, right? This is what we're doing.
Nuclear war, yes? Okay.
Yeah.
Now, Aaron, tell us about where we can find you and find your work.
Well, you can find me in all the places. Basically, on Instagram, I'm Darling with 4 H's. On Twitter, I'm Aaron A. Darling, but I'm not as fun there. Follow me on Instagram. You can follow me on TikTok at It's Conspiracy Seriously, where I debunk pop culture conspiracies, and you can listen to my podcast, Hot Pizza Ass Podcast, everywhere where podcasts are played.
Give me one good conspiracy that you've debunked.
It's really hard to debunk a lot of them because a lot of the pop culture ones are like, you have to like dig up someone's like health records. But I think the best one, the one that fascinates me the most that people believe in, is that people believe that Finland doesn't exist. Which
no, that's not.
That's a real thing.
It's a thing on Reddit. Real thing.
No,
it is.
No, what does that mean? It doesn't exist.
There's a theory.
They have a capital. They have a flag. I know people from there.
Absolutely. I'm with you on all those things. But there's a weird conspiracy that was started on Reddit as a joke, and it's been widely debunked. But some people still believe it. You can find it if you Google it. That basically what we know as Finland is a weird sanctioned fishing area that Japan and Russia wanted to keep secret. So they gave it a fake country name. And the people that actually live in Finland are actually citizens of Sweden, like other countries. Like, it's wild. This whole thing is crazy.
I get it. It is a fishing because of Finn. Finland. That's where Finland. The Finns are.
Right. It makes sense.
They're Russians. They get drunk on what? Finlandia vodka? Huh?
Sure. Yeah.
Isn't that Swedish?
Put two together, yeah. Yes.
I think that is Swedish, yeah.
Finlandia is?
I don't think it's Russian.
Well, well, the vodka, just like this episode, is Finnish.
Yes.
Wow. All right. Well,
that was beautiful.
It wasn't. No, you don't have to compliment that. Make sure you check out Hot Pizza Ass Podcast, It's Conspiracy Seriously, and at Darling with 4 H's on Instagram. Aaron, thank you so much. This has been lovely.
Thank you for having me on this podcast, but thank you in the negative sense for making me watch the movie.
Negative thank you.
A negative thank you.
What's a reverse thank you?
I think it's just a fuck you. Right?
Yeah.
Like, just
pretty much.
That's what that is.
Get fucked.
Well, fuck you.
All right.
Welcome to Cinephobe.
Next time we make love, you introduce me to Jade.